This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte.
They've been called problem solvers. They've been called relationship builders. They've also been called, even in some cases, project management planners and pros. What we're talking about, an organization that happens to be maybe one of Northwest Indiana business's best-kept secrets. But they're very busy these days, and here's a chance for you to learn more about them. We're referring to the IU Northwest Center for Professional Development. And we have with us the director of the CPD, Jana Zasek, to talk about the operations on the Gary campus and what they really do here for businesses in Northwest Indiana. Jana, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you so much.
Well, tell us a little bit about how the center got created. It's really part of the School of Business and Economics on the IU Northwest campus in Gary. But how did the center get started?
The center was started way back before my time, over 20 years ago, as a way for the school and the faculty to share their expertise with the community. The center started out providing a lot of resources and consulting and training for the local business community. Employers would come in and want specific training, and so our faculty would develop that training and go out and provide that to the business. So that's how we started. Mm-hmm. Now we're expanding a little bit into some additional programs to help the economic development of Northwest Indiana. We want to help to ensure that our workforce is well-trained and, you know, ready to help employers to succeed.
Now, you mentioned here about the fact that training was something, even at the outset of the CPD being created. What kind of training has it evolved over time in the 20 years to where you are today and what you're being able to offer for Northwest Indiana businesses that are interested?
Really, anything that a business would need, we have, I think, the expertise to help them. We have faculty in a variety of business disciplines, management, human resources, finance, accounting, marketing. We do really a variety of training and consulting for those businesses. We have consulting projects worked into coursework as well, so actual student teams in classes will, for instance, develop a marketing plan for a business. So I hate to limit us by saying these specific things.
They have a very, very wide range,
yes,
be sure, ranging from not only things that actually help a business get started or to get growing, but also if they have questions or issues with HR issues,
yes,
you can help them out too.
And we do a lot of consulting with businesses where they know that they're not performing as well as what they would like, but they're not necessarily sure of what the problem is, and so we'll come in and consult with them and look at their business operations kind of across the board, and then we'll propose to them, here are some things that we think would help, and here's how we can help you achieve those things.
One thing we should note, too, that this is much to IU Northwest's, I guess, a feather in the cap, literally, that the School of Business and Economics, of which the center is as part of, has the opportunity with the best accreditations in almost in the world, I guess, with a very small percentage of business schools in the country are part of. Tell us about how the accreditation that the university has is helping the center.
The accreditation is fantastic because it helps us to focus in on how we're performing, and it gives us a framework for making sure that we are evaluating ourselves and continuously improving our programs, our classes, everything that we offer through the School of Business. So it's really about a continuous improvement and making sure that we're the best that we can be.
We're talking with Jana Zasek, who is the director of the Center for Professional Development at Indiana University Northwest, about the center itself and the services it's offering to businesses and organizations in Northwest Indiana that need some help from time to time. I understand that the help that the center's been able to offer pretty much covers the gamut of business, from big business to small business. Tell us about some of the organizations that have called on the CPD for help and what they've been able to do.
Well, we've helped major international corporations. We've worked with the steel industry, providing training. Management training was one of the programs that we offer for them. We have worked with nonprofits, couple of the major nonprofits in this area that came to us for survey work and evaluating need in the community for their services. We have worked with fire departments and providing management training for them as well. We've even worked with some major universities outside of Northwest Indiana that needed some help on teamwork and leadership, which is an area of expertise for us. We've worked with major retailers in this area, a lot of management development, but also writing job descriptions for them and creating job analysis procedures and so forth for them.
I understand that, and this is a phrase that a name that folks involved in business and in industry in Northwest Indiana are very aware with, is Lean Six Sigma. Tell us about this methodology and how the center helps businesses deal with that.
The Lean Six Sigma is a program that combines concepts of lean operations, which is looking at, you know, the eliminating waste within your operations. And it's combined with a quality management focus. And so it combines those two concepts into a process that a business can use for evaluating and improving their operations. There are different levels to the Lean Six Sigma. We primarily talk about the green belt and the black belt. So the green belt is an entry level. Someone who has a green belt is someone who's trained to work on a continuous improvement team. And then someone who has a black belt, they're higher in their training, they would be the people who would lead that team. I actually completed the green belt program last year. I learned so much about how to improve not only the centers that I operate here for IU Northwest, but I've applied those concepts into a couple of the nonprofits that I personally work with, and it gives you a different way of thinking about how you run your business.
I know that in particular, there are a number of major businesses here in Northwest Indiana that have taken advantage of the Center for Professional Development and have some glowing recommendations on how it's happened. And NIPSCO is one of them, which is can't get much more major than that in Northwest Indiana, to be sure. What did the center work on with NIPSCO and the results that they happen to be able to take away and to be able to use now?
Quite a few of their employees have completed the Lean Six Sigma program, both green belt and black belt. So we've conducted actual programs just for them on the green belt. So we've had quite a few people come through from NIPSCO through our Lean Six Sigma program. And so they're able to go back and work more effectively in the teams at NIPSCO. They're able to identify where there might be some waste, where there might be some continuous improvement issues, and they're able to identify those, bring those to the attention of their supervisors, and hopefully then that would lead to an improvement project that NIPSCO would undertake.
I know that part of the appeal that the center has for businesses and industries, big and small in Northwest Indiana, is that they get the advantage of having the expertise of the faculty and staff at IU Northwest, but they don't have to be students, although I guess they could be if they decided to go back for master's, the MBA degree in particular. What kind of areas does the center help do that? You mentioned a lot of them here because they're all related in a way, that in turn take advantage of this expertise on campus the best and be able to help make them available to the community at large.
The certification programs benefit people whether they have a degree or do not. Mm-hmm. So the people with degrees, of course, they expand their credentials. They learn the intricacies of a particular concept such as Lean Six Sigma. Those who don't have degrees gain skills as well. They gain that Lean Six Sigma concept that they can then use to augment their resume and hopefully help them in their job search. Now, bachelor's and master's degrees remain the standard for people who want to progress in their careers. And we believe that the certification, even if you're non-degreed, it will give you the opportunity to make sure you like the field that you're pursuing and hopefully help you find a job. And maybe you'll even find employment with a company that would have some tuition reimbursement. So when you do pursue that degree, hopefully the financial side of it will be offset mm-hmm. for you as well.
I was wondering if there have been people who have taken advantage of the programs through the center, like you said, that didn't necessarily start out, and maybe you haven't been able to follow through on an actual college degree from IU Northwest, but they've been able to improve their job lot a lot, maybe in some cases big improvement on their career because of this.
Absolutely. And one of the things that was really important to me as I was setting up the certifications was that I wanted to make sure that we were providing programs for the people who did not have a degree. And so we're offering not only certifications that will help people advance their career, we're offering programs that will help them create their degree or their career. So we have foundational courses. For instance, the project management professional certification is the standard for people who want to work as a project manager. But in order to get that PMP certification, you need an extensive amount of experience in project management. So we're offering a PMP prep course for those people who have that experience and want to challenge that exam, but we're also offering a foundations in project management course for those people who don't have the experience. They can come and earn our certification. They'll learn the concepts of project management. They'll be able to go out into interviews and pursue a job at an entry-level project management position. And then when they get the experience, they can pursue that certification, but they'll at least have the certification from IU Northwest that says they completed that foundations of project management.
Now, Jana, if an organization will say XYZ Corporation or company, they're just a small business getting started. If they're interested in getting involved with the Center for Professional Development, how do they do that? How do they get their foot in the door, literally?
One of the best ways is to reach out to me, and then we can have a conversation about what their needs are. We obviously have our website. You can go to the website and learn more about our programs. The website is evolving. Our programs are evolving. So even though we're starting with about 15 certifications that we're offering in 2020, we have others in progress. And so it's kind of very fluid situation, I guess I'll say. So contacting me, if you're really not sure of which program might be best for you, would probably be the easiest approach. If you know that you definitely want, for instance, Lean Six Sigma, we have a Green Belt program beginning in May. That information is on our website. We have a project management, a foundations program starting in April. That information is on our website. And then the Dale Carnegie program, can I just mention that for a moment?
Yeah, please do.
That is I'm really excited about being able to offer the Dale Carnegie program. They are an internationally recognized training company, and their certifications are something that will stand out on a resume. So I'm really excited to have them on board as well. The program that we're starting with from Dale Carnegie is their sales program. It's called Winning with Relationship Selling. So what I want to stress, because I completed this program last year too, fantastic program. Every person in every job has sales responsibilities. Even if you're not technically a salesperson, we all are in positions where we need to sell ideas. We need to sell ourselves. We need to sell a product. Across the board, we all do this. And they have developed this program that really helps you to understand the needs of the person that you're speaking to and developing that relationship, identifying needs, and then talking about how you can help them fill that need. It's a fantastic program, and we are offering that in March. So that's coming up pretty quickly.
Well, it's time to get signed up for that if you're interested. What's the website
Definitely.
Address if people are interested in getting to know more about the center and more about these programs, the ones you've mentioned that are coming up?
So it's www.iun.edu/ CPD.
Jana Zostek is the director of the Center for Professional Development at IU Northwest, which is, of course, on the Gary campus. And Jana, thank you for spending time talking about the center, about all of the successes and the opportunities that the center and the staff members and the faculty members who participate in the center are able to make to small business and large business all across Northwest Indiana. Thank you very much for being with us to talk about it.
Well, thank you so much for giving us the opportunity. Really appreciate it.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. With another edition of Building Northwest Indiana, here's Kevin Comerford.
Welcome to another edition of Building Northwest Indiana Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Comerford, and today we're going to do something a little bit different. I'm just going to go ahead and freestyle a little bit about careers in the construction industry. I talk to a lot of people, especially students that are in high school, about careers, but there's a lot of people who are out of high school and kind of trying to find what they want to do for a living. So I kind of want to put out some information out there and, you know, maybe dispel some of the myths and talk about what goes on in our industry. A lot of the information that I'm going to give to you today, you could find on your own at the We Build Northwest Indiana website. It's pretty easy to find. You could just do an internet search for We Build Northwest Indiana, or you could go to WeBuildNWI.com. And when I talk about careers in the construction industry, most of the careers I'm going to talk about are in the skilled trades. That's just kind of where all the jobs exist. There's also managerial careers, which I'm going to talk about a little bit, but I would say the bulk of the careers exist in the construction skilled trades. And these are trades like your iron workers, your carpenters, your laborers, your construction teamsters. So, and I'll kind of get into that as we go on through the segment. One of the things I really want to talk about is this country has experienced a skilled worker shortage in the United States. I recently read a study that was done by the AGC of America, and that's the Associated General Contractors of America. They're a national construction industry trade association. Like I said, they recently did a study, I think this came out in October 2019, that said 79% of construction companies cannot find the workers that they need. So skilled labor is in high demand. Right now, worker pay is at a premium. It's a really lucrative industry to be in. One thing that I've noticed is Northwest Indiana doesn't really seem to be impacted by the skilled worker shortage that's going on nationally. And I think a lot of this is during that recession, there was a couple things that helped our area out during that time. One is the BP refinery project. It was called the WRMP project, which stands for Whiting Refinery Modernization Program or Modernization Project. And that pretty much went into effect around 2007 and ended in 2013. So it kind of peaked right there during the recession. You know, that was the largest private investment in Indiana history. At peak construction, there was 14,000 construction jobs. So it kind of kept our construction workforce employed during that time. So there wasn't a whole lot of attrition rate in construction during the BP project. And then also coinciding with that was the Major Moves project. A lot of you remember the Indiana State Assembly decided to lease the toll road, and they got $2.6 billion up front for that. And so that money was statewide, so a lot of that spending went statewide, but there was a couple large projects that took place in the area. One of the notable ones was the I-65-8094 interchange, and there was also a lot of different bridges that went into construction during that time and a lot of lane expansions. And then that also funded the Indiana RDA, so that pumped hundreds of millions into local construction projects as well. So during that recession, this area was in good shape just because of those projects, so it kept our workers working. Today, I kind of wanted to talk about why you would consider a career in the construction industry. For one is our outlook is great. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, construction laborers are projected to grow 11% from 2018 through 2028. So through that 10-year period, we're expected to grow much faster than the average for all occupations. So what is spurring this growth? I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, just the booming economy. Our economy has been growing rapidly since 2009. I think we were on the longest bull market run in the history of the United States. And that leads to new manufacturing facilities, new restaurants, new housing, healthcare. Another thing is our infrastructure is starting to fail. You know, a lot of our infrastructure in this country was created by the Federal Aid Highway Act of 1956. This was during the Eisenhower administration. And that created like the interstate system of roads and bridges. And a lot of that's coming to the end of its useful life. And then there's other wonderful things happening coming in the near future. You know, the RDA rail expansion, that's expected to add billions of dollars into the Northwest Indiana economy. You know, and then you got your ongoing industry that's already here, like the steel mills, the power plants, the refinery. You know, they're going to have to do capital improvements and maintenance projects just to keep competitive. We're in a pretty lucky area with the heavy industry. The outlook is great in the union construction industry. Another reason why you might want to consider a career in the construction industry is surveys consistently find that construction workers are the happiest employees in the nation. You might wonder why that is. Well, one thing is, you know, the work's pretty exciting. You know, nothing is routine in the construction industry. Like every day you're kind of doing something different. It's not like you're going to the same location every day and doing the same monotonous thing. I mean, every day you're kind of working on something different and you're actually building something with your hands that kind of stands the test of time. And I think there's a lot of job satisfaction in that. Another thing is you're working in teams. And I think there's a lot of camaraderie among team members. You know, there's really good relationships between coworkers. And I think that has a lot to do with job satisfaction. And I think there's a lot of responsibility. And I think people really want responsibility in their jobs. So construction workers have a lot of responsibility that's put on them, and they really embrace it. So I think that's one of the reasons why we have some of the happiest employees in the nation. I really don't like talking about this one because I think people get into the construction industry for the wrong reasons, but it's the wages. The total wage package in construction on average is $64.59 an hour. And that's current data here in Northwest Indiana. Now, when I say total wage package, that includes the benefit package and the health and welfare, or the benefit package includes the health and welfare and the pension. Roughly, it's about $40 an hour on the paycheck. That's the hourly wage rate. And if you take 40 hours a week and with no overtime, you know, I mean, that alone, if you're working, you know, pretty much every week of the year, that translates into about $85,000 a year. Like I said, that's with no overtime. Now, you add in overtime, you can earn a lot more in the construction industry. Well, that's all the time I have today on Building Northwest Indiana. If you're interested in a career in the Northwest Indiana construction industry, you can find out more information at WeBuildNWI.com or just do an internet search for We Build Northwest Indiana. I'm your host, Kevin Comerford.
Support for Building Northwest Indiana comes from the Construction Advancement Foundation. And you can hear Building Northwest Indiana on Tuesdays right here on Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. And the podcasts are also available online as well at lakeshorepublicradio.org. This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversation to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
I was born in Texarkana in Texas. It's a city near where Oklahoma, Arkansas, Texas, and Louisiana come together. When I first came to Valpo, I was really excited to be in a new place and to start college, and out of all of my friends, I went the farthest away, and I was proud of that decision, and I owned it. And then on the first day of class, freshman year, I wore my cowboy hat and my boots, and by the end of the day, I just felt so discouraged, and I just wanted to go home so bad because I got inappropriate comments about, oh, so you're a cowgirl, you must like to ride. They assumed that I was automatically uneducated or racist, homophobic, sexist, all of these other things just because I was from the South, which felt like an unfair judgment to me because I came to a new place not trying to judge anybody, and I got a bunch of judgment. Even though sometimes I still feel like people look at me funny for wearing my hat, or when my accent slips out, or when I talk about my small town Southern experiences, I know that there are places on campus I can find and groups of people who do cherish me and value me for me. I would say I really feel like I belong when I'm working with animals because rehabilitating animals is one of my passions. The animals don't care who I'm friends with or what grade I've gotten on a test or what group I'm in, what my accent sounds like, what I wear. All they care about is that I feed them and take care of them and meet their needs in whatever way I can. My career goal is to be a state game warden, which is a conservation officer, basically the police of the woods and the water. And then we also help with injured animals, injured wildlife, if they can be rehabilitated. Sometimes you just have to put the animal out of its misery. I definitely heard when I started pursuing this career field that I can't do it. I can't do it because I'm a woman. I can't do it because I'm too emotional and soft-hearted. And I think it's the exact opposite. I think those are the reasons I can do it. If you care about animals, you're going to do what's best for them. And if it's the choice of you having to suffer a little so that they don't have to suffer at all anymore, or them suffering a lot and you having to watch that, the obvious choice is ending their suffering. I don't think of emotions as a bad thing. Sure, there are officers who aren't emotional, and that's fine. I was told as a senior in high school that all you need to do the job of a police officer well is passion for the job. There are people who think I can do it, and I know I can do it. And then there are always going to be those people who think that emotions are bad and make me unstable and mean that I'm going to be crying in the middle of an arrest or something like that, and that's not true.
You can find more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. Our next guest here on Regionally Speaking, we've had on before. In fact, Isaiah Mears is the chairman of the Indiana Federation of College Republicans here in Indiana. He's also the president emeritus of the College Republicans at the college that he is attending, which is Wabash College, that is in Crawfordsville here in West Central Indiana. And the Republican Party is interested in the environment, and the younger next generation of Republicans, as they call themselves, are very much interested in that. And Isaiah is with us with update. Thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for having me, sir.
I understand, and we talked a little of this, and you mentioned some of this in our last conversation, that the effort was underway amongst all of the college Republican Party organizations on campuses across the state, and unfortunately not all the campuses apparently have them, otherwise they would have signed in on this letter, I know, and maybe that will change. But the idea is that younger Republicans have ideas about climate change, about the environment, that they would like the older folks, I suppose, the more established Republican Party members to know about. Tell us about the discussions that you all had literally amongst yourselves that in turn produced this letter that went out on February 6th.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's exactly what you said. You know, we're having the discussion and we're wanting people to know about it, right? So we kind of see ourselves as foot soldiers for recruiting the next generation of Republicans. We're pretty clear-eyed about the GOP and the issues of climate and the environment, and we think it's a moment for leadership and a moment for GOP leadership. You know, we drafted this letter. We want people to know that we're serious. We want our legislators and our policymakers to know that we're serious, and so that's exactly what we did. My executive director, Drake Abramson, he's actually the chairman at University of Indianapolis. The two of us organized this letter and then called each individual chapter and had excellent discussions and had them sign on to this. And then we distributed that out to our policymakers here in the state and then also in Washington, D.C.
We should note that the organization within the Hoosier State includes not only yourself, Isaiah, there at Wabash College, and you mentioned Drake Abramson, who is at University of Indy, but it also includes other campuses, for example, like IUPUI and IU Southwest, and also campuses around the region, like Indiana State, and smaller campuses like Valparaiso University. Are these some of the thoughts that the membership at these organizations seem to have in common? Obviously, you have a bigger view from bigger members, but when you have the smaller campuses, that they probably feel along the same lines, don't they?
Definitely. I mean, regardless of the size, right? I mean, I think this is a conversation that needs to be had. You know, it shouldn't just be coming from our bigger colleges. It should be coming from all over the state. And I think that especially young people understand this issue and understand that this conversation needs to be had, and they want to make it happen.
Do you think that in the case of the Republican Party that you have to take a little different tact than perhaps what the Democrats have already offered up with the New Green Deal, focusing, I suppose, on the, more of the, I guess, the business end or the political end of the issue?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, when you hear the word climate change, especially for conservatives, it's kind of a trigger word, right? And so it's getting over the initial hurdle of this is a scary topic, we don't want to talk about it, to, okay, well, now that we are talking about it, how can we come up with conservative solutions to it? And so, I mean, one solution that we're seeing that we really like is a pro-business climate solution called carbon dividend. And it's putting a price on carbon and taking that money and putting it right back into our economy and giving it back to the people. And, you know, it slashed our emissions by half by 2035 and shrink the size of government. So, I mean, these are obviously conservative ideas that can happen. These are conversations that we want to happen, and these are things that we want to get done.
When you all got together to draft the letter, you mentioned you and Drake did a lot of the, I guess, a lot of the legwork in getting this together. Did you all have to have a meeting, getting all of the campus representatives together to take a look at drafts and all before you finally got this letter that in turn is going out to all of the Indiana Republican congressional delegation?
Yeah, so the way that it was kind of written up is Drake and myself kind of put it together along with a few members of our team that are out working in D.C. as well. And then we sent this letter out to the individual campuses and we said, hey, can we set up a phone call? We want to talk about it. And then we had great conversations through that. Some people had some backlash. Some people thought that they wanted something else differently, which we totally understand. But, you know, I think it was a productive experiment, a productive thing to do overall. And obviously, as you can tell, we had 10 colleges sign up. So.
Now, going to the letter, if you will tell us what the general intent is that we had discussions and you got this information down, your reasoning for wanting the Republican Party to consider a plank in the platform about climate action, climate change and the like, what are you hoping that Indiana's GOP delegation is going to be able to do?
Well, I mean, I think that especially in Indiana, we're seeing that we're kind of taking a lead on this. You know, you look at Senator Braun, and you look at all the work that he's doing. He's recruiting other senators to come into the climate caucus. We're even kind of seeing Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy is kind of stepping in line as well. You know, he's tipping the scales, and we're hoping that we can do the same within our own Indiana House and Indiana delegation. We know that the coal bill was just passed, but we think that, I mean, overall, that's not the discussion. The discussion is we want to talk about climate change. We need a solution to it. We need a conservative solution to it. And people in the state want that. And that's what we want to make happen.
Now, I can't recall right off the top of my head if we had this part of the conversation last time, but I know that the issue certainly has come up here. We have the primary election coming up here in May, and, of course, the general election in November. We have a few changes that will come about. There will be some folks in the congressional districts who will have new candidates to deal with. And we know that there are some Republican candidates here even in the first congressional district, which, of course, has been Pete Fisklosky's for decades. And these Republicans, I'm sure, will be interested in wanting to get on the ballot and get voters to vote their way. Do you think that you're going to have to do a selling job, so to speak, on some of the candidates who will be open for these seats that will be up? Or have you had those conversations already?
Well, I think as they're kind of formating their platform, I think that this is something that they need to add to it. I think this is something that's going to attract voters, especially young voters. You know, I mean, there's so many young people in Indiana that aren't even taking a look at candidates solely because they don't have this within their platform or they don't want to talk about this or they're just throwing it off. And so I think that this is something that they need to take a serious look at. And obviously, we're more than happy to have a conversation with them and happy to push this forward.
Well, Isaiah, thank you for the update today. We really appreciate it. We appreciate knowing about the letter that's gone out to the Republican congressional delegation from the College Republican, the Indiana Federation. And we hope to, again, find out an update next time it comes about. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, sir.
Isaiah Mayers is the chairman of the Indiana Federation of College Republicans, and he's also a student at Wabash College in Crawfordsville. The Indiana State Police, along with local law enforcement agencies and commercial truckers, want to make citizens aware of the problems of human trafficking. And in Northwest Indiana, with so many major highways running through it, it's always one potential human trafficking zone. Indiana State Police spokesman Sergeant John Prine was with us not long ago to talk about the issue. In fact, last month was a public awareness campaign.
Comes a lot of obstacles in the investigation. Things that we can talk about later, but this is something that happens in the state of Indiana, and we want to educate people as much as possible on the signs to look for these people that are being trafficked. But you know, contrary to what a lot of people believe, rarely is it an abduction. Is it somebody's going to find somebody at a store, shove them in the back of a van, and then they're going to be trafficked? There's a lot more to it than that.
When the problem has come up here, it's been going on for decades and decades, and we know that in the beginning years, if you keep track of such information, it seems to have gone back many, many, many decades, and a lot of it was related in large part to organized crime, was it not?
Yeah, without question, that is a big part of it, and again, these are crimes that happen over time. These people build, these criminals, these traffickers, they build a huge network, and it's much more organized than people would actually probably believe.
I know that at least around here in Northwest Indiana, some of the issues of late have come up, even as recently as this past year, have been dealing with the issue of massage parlors, and that is just, I guess, one front, so to speak, that human traffickers use to be able to ply their trade, right?
Yeah, you know, the massage parlors and things like that, essentially what they're doing is these victims, these people who are being trafficked, whether it be for sex trafficking or labor trafficking is kind of two of the common ones,
mm-hmm.
They're given that stability. Maybe it's, hey, we're going to give you a job, we're going to give you your necessities, whatever you need, and in turn you're going to do here's what you're going to do for us. And so those are the kinds of crimes that we're seeing with these massage parlors and things like this.
When the month of January got underway and the official Human Trafficking Awareness Month began, how did the information campaign get started, and what expansion into what branches of the society, I guess, or the business society for that matter, too, because you've got businesses that are, I guess, largely involved in helping spread the word?
Yeah, you know, we work with an organization called Truckers Against Trafficking, TAT. And they do a lot of campaigns, a lot of information. And the reason why truckers are targeted so much is because they're spanning our roadways across the country and seeing a lot of things. And where we see a lot of trafficking is, you know, truck stops and rest areas and the places where these truck drivers commonly visit. So they're our best eyes and ears for this to fight this crime, and we're relying on them to report that to us, but they have to know what to look for, and that's what the education piece is about.
Now, we would think that the issue, of course, is we find focused here in Northwest Indiana because we have Illinois and then Michigan not all that far away. You have all these major highways, some of the heaviest traveled in the country, running right through Northwest Indiana with I-80, 94, and I-65, mm-hmm. and the Indiana Toll Road and the like. But there are other highways all across the state that have this sort of traffic issue, don't they, in a way?
Yeah, we are the crossroads of America. I mean, so many roads crisscross through our great state, and we see a lot of vehicular traffic. And without question comes the criminal element of that. That is, the human traffickers are using our roads to get to their places.
When you have the information campaign that was underway this last month, and you, I guess it's some good information that came out of it, the results of all the conversations that you've had and all the opportunities to talk to people about it, and you mentioned, of course, Truckers Against Trafficking, to be sure.
Mm-hmm.
How did the stats show up here as we finished up the month of January as to how the awareness program went for this month?
Well, you know, it's good. We talked to a lot of people, and we handed out a lot of pamphlets, information, not just to truck drivers, but to workers at the rest areas and workers at the truck stops, and just kind of communities in general. We just want people to see what the signs are from somebody that's being trafficked, because again, it's not always an abduction. It's usually happens over time where this trafficker will befriend somebody, and they will start providing this victim with a lifestyle that they haven't ever experienced. Maybe they've come from a not very stable household, a poverty or poor household, and they're getting things in return that they've never been had access to. And so over time, they get introduced into this lifestyle of sex trafficking or human trafficking, and they almost get comfortable with it to the point where they think this is a good life. And unfortunately, they've been manipulated to believe that, and they've been brainwashed, for lack of a better term. And now they're victims of trafficking, and sometimes it's hard to locate those people.
What plans does the state police have to continue on through 2020?
Well, we do. We will continue our education piece through utilizing social media channels, our local medias, relying on great radio stations like yours, and to help us get the word out, because we want people in the back of their mind, when they see something that's out of place, when they see a person who just doesn't fit, or maybe they have a friend or a family member that they see some significant changes in, we want them to be thinking of the possibility of this trafficking crime, and they need to know that there are resources out there that can help them not only identify this, but intervene early and maybe keep it from happening.
That's Indiana State Police Public Information Officer Sergeant John Perrine. The Indiana NAACP says keeping coal-fired power plants open longer would negatively affect the health of low-income and minority communities here in the state. And as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports, the groups asked lawmakers to vote down a House bill that in turn would delay the closing of coal-fired power plants.
The bill would require the state to review a plant closure, hold a public hearing, and issue a report on whether or not the closure is reasonable. Lawmakers also added a provision that would help former coal miners in Indiana find jobs. But LaTanya Troutman, with the LaPorte County branch of the NAACP, says low-income and minority groups that live near these coal plants are often neglected.
We can't overlook these communities and their needs as well just for the sake of others when we're the ones breathing it in.
NIPSCO plans to shutter its Michigan City coal plant in 8 years. Troutman says delaying the closure would likely increase rates for the city's residents, many of which already struggle to pay their energy bills. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
A new data tool from the state aims to make it easier for families to access school information. And Jeannie Lindsay tells us more about what Hoosiers can find out by checking out the new website.
The State Department of Education rolled out the new data portal called InView late last month. The rollout was spurred by federal school transparency laws, but spokesperson Adam Baker says the department added other features not required by the feds, including a school mapping and comparison tool. He says it's supposed to be more user-friendly so families moving around the state can research schools they might send their kids to.
So on that very front page, when you open it, you've got this feature where you can actually physically map the school.
InView includes additional data on discipline, school funding per student, and teacher experience and demographics. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You would expect a geography professor to study geography, especially if he's working on a major project, but there is one geography professor at Valparaiso University that is not only researching geography, but the geography of country music. And it's kind of expanded from an earlier project that he has had. Mike Longan is with us to talk about his current work right now as he's continuing his work as a member of the VU faculty. And Professor Longan, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I understand that you kind of started out your work on geography looking into, I guess, what can best be described as the ex-urban culture here in Northwest Indiana, but you've kind of added to it, and that's what you've gotten into now. Tell us first about the initial work that you did and how you've gotten country music all involved in it now.
I'm not from here. I'm from Colorado originally, and as I get to know the place, I was interested in kind of some of the cultural differences I experienced living here, and I thought I might do a study of the rural sort of ex-urban culture here in Northwest Indiana because I found it pretty fascinating. And so I proposed that, and that never really went very far, but in the process I got to know this region's country music scene. At the time it was centered at D.C.'s Country Junction, and taught a class in rural geography, and used country music as a way to understand the rural, and the research emerged out of that.
When you get country music involved in this, whether it's local or regional or even national, I guess, because I understand that you've kind of taken this stretch even further outside the Northwest Indiana, but where do you find country music seem to best fit into what we have here in Northwest Indiana as our overall culture?
We have a pretty robust country music scene here in Northwest Indiana. I mean, I guess the way I got introduced to it was the radio station that's ubiquitous, pretty much in a local shop, very locally oriented radio station. And so I think country music is a part of this region. And, you know, there's a pretty long history of country performers coming through with the Porter County Fair and with D.C.'s Country Junction for the while it was open. And, you know, even before that, Chicago itself could have been the country music capital with a WLS barn dance. And of course, country music migrated to this region as people from Appalachia moved up looking for work in the factories here in this region historically. Yeah. So
I suppose in the same way that the jazz seemed to evolve around Chicago because we had blacks that came up from the South to look for better work up that way too. So it's all the same, and it doesn't matter whether it happens to be a syncopated music or whether it happens to be country music. It's still music.
Definitely.
Now, you've been able to go into this here in Northwest Indiana in particular, and looking into this geography of country music. I understand that you've had an opportunity to branch out around the world almost. How did you end up doing your study work into this topic in Australia, of all places?
I traveled to Australia quite a few, I guess it was 2006, yeah. And then I wanted to go back and you know, one thing I noticed is that country music was on all the radio stations, or there was a country music radio station wherever I went in Australia. It's popular there. One of my chapters in my book will be on country music festivals. So in 2016, I went to the Tamworth Country Music Festival in Tamworth, Australia, which is in New South Wales, and experienced that. I was about the only American I met, other than some of the performers, but It was really cool. It was all very good. The level of talent there is amazing. Yeah. Music is great, and I'm a fan of a lot of country music performers from Australia.
Who were some of the performers from America that you met while you were over there?
No one in particular. There were a couple. They were not big performers. I don't remember exactly who they were. Mm-hmm. I remember more of the Australian performers, actually, like Adam Brand and Casey Chambers being two of my favorites there.
I know you've also been able to take this in your scholarly work a step further by having a chance to check out the documentary that Ken Burns is working on recently about country music. Tell us about what that documentary is all about and your impression of it.
It's a good history of country music. It was very, very long, but at the same time, it had to be pretty selective. So I think it gives a great overview of the history of country music, and probably has some surprising revelations about it for people that aren't necessarily familiar with country music at all. And I think it shows that it is a valuable part of our culture. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed the documentary. I thought it was well done. There's so much more to say about country music, though. And
we're talking with Mike Longan. He's a geography professor at Valparaiso University. He's been researching the geography of country music, and of course you have students involved in your research. Tell us how they fit into it.
In the past, I've had a few students that were interested in both geography and country music come help me out with the research. I had a couple students that, when I very first got started, we went down to Nashville to go to the Country Music Hall of Fame. They have the archive, the Frist archive there, which has all kinds of information. So I started there with my research, and I brought two students with me, and we had a good day or two looking at the archives there and checking out Nashville. And then I had some students help me later date with some surveys that I did locally, asking people about their relationship to country music.
So. Now, since you've got your research already underway in this, and you branched out not only from Northwest Indiana, but around the world, apparently, where's it to go now as you get things together?
Well, I've got a lot of data and a lot of on ideas put together, and I've been presenting at the International Country Music Conference in Nashville for the last 6 years. So I've got a lot of stuff sort of put together, so the next thing to do is to get it all into a book form.
I was going to ask if you were going to become a scholarly author of the subject, if this is something that appealed to you.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We'll look forward to a book coming out here about the geography of country music. And, of course, it all got started by studying culture here in Northwest Indiana. We thank you, Professor Longan, for being with us to talk about it today.
Thank you very much.
Mike Longan is a Valparaiso University geography professor. He's studying the geography of country music that started out here in Northwest Indiana and now is ranched around the world. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us. Back with you tomorrow.